Hello, Art. I understand you've been involved with the project over at Mission Rosario, which is part of the Goliad Mission Complex, doing some archaeology over there.
Yes, we've had a project going on this summer, done by the University of Texas at San Antonio. They've been doing some testing for us in advance of doing a stabilization project on the ruins. This is just the latest in a long series of excavations that have been done out there, starting with the 1940s, work that the federal government did out there. And then in the 1970s, there's the work that Kathleen Gilmore did
Oh, that's great.
for
And
us.
this is her
This is
report?
her report right here.
Well, she must have discovered quite a bit. That's a thick report. What did she find?
A whole variety of artifacts and material culture from the people who lived at the site.
Evidence of the buildings, I suppose.
Of course, architectural remains are the most prominent feature of the site. Those are the types of things that are going to be restored today.
Oh, great. And then Dr. Rickless did some work out there?
Yes, during the 1980s, he's been doing work both at Rosario and at Goliad. And that book is a result of some of his earlier studies on the Karankawa, and was published in 1996.
I saw an article by him in this book as well,
Yes.
Bulletin of the Texas Archaeological Society. In fact, I found both of his books in the library. So if somebody was interested in the Karankawa, I guess they might be able to go to their local library and find these books
Oh, I'm
and read
sure.
what Dr. Rickless discovered.
Yes.
But you know, I was doing some more reading about the Karankawa, and I found that they were not really the first Indians to live in this part of what we now call Texas. Actually, if we'll look at this historic map for just a moment, what I discovered is that there was a Spaniard named Cabeza de Vaca who was sailing off the coast here in a fleet, and there was a shipwreck off the coast of Texas. And only a few people survived, and he and maybe four other guys came over to the coast and started traveling down, and they met various Indians that they found and called Karankawa. But people had been living in that area for much longer. From archaeology, we know perhaps as long as 10,000 years. So what we know about those Karankawa, and to some extent the earlier Indians of that area, is that they lived on the coast, and they made their living by fishing. And this would be both the fin fish and the shellfish. But at other times of year, they would go inland to the rivers and hunt and gather wild plant foods. So they really had lots of different kinds of food in their diet. And it turns out from various studies and from explorers who found them, you know, in the early days of history here in Texas, that they would spend the winters on the coast, and they would join together in large kind of fishing camps, as it were, and then they would move inland to the inner plains, and when they would hunt, they would be in smaller groups. Maybe that was a better way to do hunting. And I think when Cabeza de Vaca came, he found them making their living in this very same way. But he was, of course, the first Spaniard, and as time went by, more and more Spaniards came, and eventually the missions were established. And at that time, the Karankawa way of life started to change, at least slightly. It began to be influenced by the presence of the Spaniards and by other elements of mission life. And I think that some of the objects that have been found at Mission Rosario would have evidence of both of those life ways. I know you've been looking at some of these and have studied them. What's your opinion on that?
You're correct. The variety of artifacts that we have here are some that I believe show that transition from a native life ways with the adaptation of elements of Spanish culture into their lifestyles. The ceramics, for instance, we have changes from native ceramics to native ceramics showing us a Spanish influence by the addition of various features and everything.
Let me take a look at this for just a moment. I've studied these just a bit, and I can see some elements of this that are definitely native. If you notice these black stripes, they're made by a material called asphaltum, which is like a native asphalt tar that's available on beaches. You can only assume the Karankawa picked it up while they were down on the coast doing their fishing. And these squiggles is a characteristic Karankawa design. They're set in vertical lines. And then these little dots here are actually punctations. they perhaps used a pointed stick or something else to impress an image into the pot. So this is a very typical Karankawa pot, and it's the kind of thing that we might see in a Karankawa camp before they met any Spaniards. So this might be the most native of the items that we see here. Let's look at a couple of others and see what other elements are present.
Well, this is an example of the adoption of a Spanish trait. Karankawa pottery, up until the time they began to visit the missions and everything, basically were simple vessels and did not mm-hmm. have handles.
Oh.
One of the things that they adopted from the Spanish vessels that they found in use there was the use of the handles and everything.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, this is very definitely a handle. You know what it reminds me of is a handle on kind of an iron kettle. I wonder if they were trying to make handles that looked like the kettles that the Spaniards were using in the mission.
Quite possibly.
Very interesting. So what else do we have here?
Well, here's a good example of a change in the way they made things. These are very interesting objects. No one really knows for sure what these objects were used for.
Uh-huh.
It's thought that they were like game tokens or counters
okay.
of some type.
Uh-huh.
However, the one that you're holding there is made of a pottery type that is made by the native peoples in,
uh-huh.
in their own traditions and everything.
It looks very much like this native pottery that we
yes.
were looking at first.
Of course, with time and living at the missions and everything, they
uh-huh.
Became exposed to the Spanish ceramics and everything.
Oh.
And here we see
uh-huh.
a similar one made
okay.
out of a piece of broken Mahalika vessel.
Wow, this looks, it has a glassy kind of shiny surface. It looks like it's been glazed. Would that be correct?
Yes, that's a Mahalika or a tin glaze.
Oh, okay.
Began to be developed by at least the 900s, and by the 1500s, the technology for that type of glaze had spread around the world and was being made in most European ceramic producing locations and in Mexico, too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Well, you know, what happened to the Karankawa? I haven't, you know, met any recently going down to the coast. Tell me, are they still here in Texas today? What became of them?
Well, Margaret, the Karankawa were sort of the victim of the times. Their lifestyle, free roaming across the countryside, moving from the coast to inland and everything, when the Spanish began to come in and build the missions and everything, their missions and everything were in specific centers, and
uh-huh.
the Karankawa could continue their lifestyle. However, as Anglos began to move into the area and land was purchased and acquired and divided up into individual ownership and fences and things like
oh.
this were built, they could no longer live their own
sure.
lifestyle. By the Texas Revolution, they sort of got caught between warring forces of the two sides,
uh-huh.
and by the end of the Revolution, there weren't many left. And their hunting territories and areas were quite restricted, and they began to move further south and probably met other native groups and were assimilated into other Indian cultures in Mexico.
Oh, very interesting. So they're kind of with us today, but they no longer can be identified specifically as Karankawa. We have a question from someone out in the audience. Dorian wants to know, how did the Karankawa get their name? I think that's a very good question. The Karankawa did not have a written language. So what Cabeza de Vaca did when he came to Texas was he met people and he probably said, hey, I'm Cabeza de Vaca, what's your name? And of course he's speaking Spanish and they're speaking a language he doesn't know. He eventually learns it. And what they say, we are the whoever. And they say something that sounds to him like Karankawa. So we call them Karankawa now. That was their name for themselves. But the way we spell it, we're just trying to use our letters in English to make the sound of the name that they call themselves. Where do they originate, Dorian also asks. We believe that they are native to Texas. We mentioned a minute ago that Indians were here in Texas for as many as 10,000 years. They could have been right here in Texas all that time. But we cannot be sure, because they had no language that's written, we will not dig up a tablet where they say we were Karankawa and this was 9,000 years ago. We do know that the way of living in that part of Texas was pretty similar over that whole period of time, and those earliest Indians in that part of coastal Texas could have been Karankawa. that's what we believe at this time. We're still using archaeology to try to prove that.
Well, Margaret, here are a couple of other interesting questions. We're asked, do we know if the Carrancas were really cannibals?
Oh, you know, that is an unfortunate rumor that has grown over the years. Like many other native people in the Americas, the Carrancas believed that everybody had power in themselves. And if you had an enemy and you killed that person, their power would come and still be warring against you unless you took some of that power into yourself. So they practiced what we call sometimes ritual cannibalism. After they killed an enemy, they would take a little part of that person and they would eat it to take that person's power into themselves. But as far as having, you know, their enemy for dinner every night, that was not the case. They were religious people, just like the Spanish were, but their religion was a little different and involved this, what we call ritual cannibalism. Another question?
Okay, here's another. Benita has asked, do you know that there was a mummified Carrancan Indian displayed at Padre Island in the past? And do we know whatever happened to it?
That's another very good question. I mentioned that the Carrancan had their own religion. A number of native people have their own religion. And in the past, perhaps, we were not so aware that displaying a body of someone who died was offensive to a lot of native people. In the past, you would visit a museum and you might see a case with an Indian body lying in there. Now, it's very unlikely that you are, let's say, would visit a museum and find your grandma laid out in a case. You might find that offensive. You might feel like she was supposed to rest in peace in a private place. Well, a lot of native people feel that way. So we no longer display Indian remains in cases out of respect to all the native people and their religions. And really, we're just being fair. We're treating them the same way that we would treat our own ancestors, like your grandmother or mine. Mm-hmm. Well, that about wraps it up for us. We're going to skip to another topic here, plants. We have not mentioned much about plants, but they played a big part in Native American life. Chuck is now going to tell us about local native plants and their uses.
Hi,